This week on the College Football Roundup, it's Petrino time in Fayetteville. Illinois gets their groove back, Penn State throws it all away, and so much more. This is the Monday Report, starting now. All right. Hello, everybody. It is Monday, September 29th, 2025, and this is the Monday Report. I'm your host, H. James K., and today we got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about the University of Arkansas entering the coaching carousel, Illinois taking down USC, Georgia falling short against Alabama, Penn State choking it all away against Oregon. And then we're going to talk about Michigan versus Wisconsin next week and a short look ahead to other games going forward in week six. All right, so right off the top, Arkansas fired head coach Sam Pittman. He was their head coach for the last 6 years, 2020 to 2025. Bobby Petrino, who was the head coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks from 2008 to 2011, will be named their head coach, their interim head coach, going forward. To be honest with you, I would not be surprised if Petrino was given the job if things kind of turn around in the next couple of weeks, if they rattle off, you know, 4 or 5 wins or whatever. It's one of those where Petrino was brought in because his offenses at Arkansas were electric and things were kind of going well, and then he ended up getting fired for lying to the administration about who else was involved in a motorcycle crash that he got in 2011. Sorry, a little drink of water there to wet my whistle. And since then, there was the whole Brett Bielema experience at Arkansas, and then they went to Sam Pittman, but nothing has quite worked out for the Razorbacks. So now they brought in Sam Pittman, hoping to keep his job, brought in Bobby Petrino to call the offense, and that hasn't quite worked out, but that's more because Sam Pittman just, it isn't working out in Fayetteville. So they have fired him after an 0-4 start that saw some really, I think they're 0-4. They might be 1-3. Either way, it's not been going well. And I could throw out some names, you know, Jeff Traylor, G.J. Kinney. There are other names that could be the new head coach, but I genuinely believe it's going to be Bobby Petrino. I think that's how it's going to turn out, because they're going to make the quote-unquote safe play, hoping to rekindle the magic, even though the SEC is infinitely more difficult than it was, and infinitely more competitive than it was back in 2009 and all that. So we'll see how that goes, but that another head coach has gone down. All right, moving on. Illinois got their groove back. They defeated the USC Trojans at home by a score of 34-32 on a game-winning field goal as time expired. Illinois was blown out 63-10 against Indiana the week before. Had a whole bunch of injuries, and it was one of those games where you don't even look at the tape. You just burn the tape and move on. You don't even think about it. But it was humiliating. And head coach Brett Bielema and the team, they really took it personally that they weren't physical. They got dominated and humiliated by a team that they thought was inferior. Which in hindsight, maybe not. But either way, on Saturday, the Fighting Illini reasserted their dominance. Goodness gracious, they ran right at USC's face. Over and over and over, right up the guts for giant chunks of yardage. They physically dominated the USC Trojans. And if it wasn't for Mekhi Lemon going absolute beast mode at wide receiver for USC, the game, and two mind-blowing red zone fumbles near the goal line from Illinois. If it wasn't for those two things, this game could have easily been 45-20. Like, the game was not as close as it seemed. There were the two red zone fumbles really prevented Illinois from just putting the game away. One of them would have allowed Illinois to go up 21-7 into halftime when getting the ball to start the second half. They could have easily been 28-7 before. So the game, Illinois really controlled the game right until they didn't. They were really in control, and then all of a sudden they decided, you know what, we're going to keep doing man coverage, and Mekhi Lemon is just going to keep catching balls and catching balls. He had like he had 11 catches for 151 yards and like multiple touchdowns. But, and yes, they came back and they got the lead 32-31. But at the end of the day, you are what your identity as a team says you are. And Illinois is a tough, resilient football team, and USC is soft. And Illinois ran the ball well, threw the ball when they needed to, moved down the field, kicked a game-winning field goal, and that was that. And the key takeaway I got from this game was culture. Illinois is a tough, resilient, physical team that likes to run the ball and play defense. They're going to punch you in the mouth and dominate you, because that's the mentality of their head coach. That's the mentality of their entire program. USC under Lincoln Riley, they are soft. He tries to talk a big game about how we're going to get tough in the line of scrimmage, and we're going to run the ball more, and we're going to play good defense. But at the end of the day, they get pushed around, they get bullied, they make mistakes that a tough team doesn't make. They get run all over because at the end of the day, they're soft. That's it. They're soft. And it's one of those things where I'm tired of hearing how USC is going to come into the Big Ten and teach us how to play football. Yeah, right. You couldn't beat Minnesota last year. You got pushed around by a Michigan team that didn't understand the forward pass, that played the game like it was 1900, and yet you lost. Michigan did a 2-minute drill last year that was only running plays. Soft. And Illinois further proved that Lincoln Riley is soft. And it's one of these things where, and I keep saying it's one of these things, I'm sorry. The Trojans were known for being a physical team that they were a team that would leave you battered and bruised. They would leave you uncomfortable because you were hitting so hard. And they've gone away from that. They've just stopped being a team that you had to fear, a team that would physically dominate you. What happened? It's USC. They should be able to recruit better than this. They should be able to have that hard edge. And I know part of it is California as a state is kind of soft, and it's kind of a cultural thing in that state, and they just kind of recruit how the whole state feels, which is more about vibes than about hard work, granted. But still, the USC Trojans should be better than this. They shouldn't be getting bullied by Minnesota and Illinois. And I'm sorry to Illinois, they're a great team, but USC should be better than this. They should be up there with Penn State, Oregon, Ohio State, Michigan, the teams that actually control the Big Ten Conference. And I don't think they're ever going to get there until they fire Lincoln Riley. Because Lincoln Riley doesn't understand what championship football is supposed to be. His teams aren't tough. They're not resilient. They commit insanely undisciplined penalties all the time. They turn the ball over. They fail to run the ball when you really need to run the ball. They make too many lapses on defense. Championship teams do not get run up the middle for 7-8 yards a pop. It just doesn't happen. And yet it does happen to USC. So they're soft. And circling back to Illinois, I still believe Illinois is a good team. I like their brand of football. They're not a team that's going to wow you with aerial attack, and they're not going to be all flashy and make a lot of highlights. But if you allow them to get a lead, they're just going to sit on you and smother you to death. Because that's the kind of team, much like Michigan, that's the kind of team that they are. And I like those kind of teams. All right, moving on to Georgia versus Alabama. Alabama defeated Georgia in Athens by a score of 24-21. And this game had no scoring in the fourth quarter. Exiting the third quarter, it was 24-21 Bama. And there was no scoring. And the most controversial play of the game was Kirby Smart and Georgia electing not to kick a game-tying field goal towards the end of the third quarter and go into the fourth quarter all tied up. Instead, they went for it on fourth down, they didn't get it, they never scored again, and they lost the game. Simple as that. And yes, maybe the analytics said you go for it, you know, it's a fourth and uber short, even though you're in field goal range, you go for it and keep chewing clock and try to get a touchdown, but at the end of the day, sometimes you just gotta kick a field goal. Tie it up. Take the pressure off. Put the pressure back on Bama, saying, okay, now you've got to take the lead back. Can you do it? Kirby Smart has an Alabama problem. Now, Bama has won 7 of the last 8 matchups between these teams when you combine both the regular and the postseason and conference championships. When you combine all the different matchups they could have possibly had, Bama has won 7 of the last 8. How do you square that circle? Georgia, where you at, man? What's going on? You're supposed to be better. You're supposed to be the team that runs the SEC, and you're losing to Kalen DeBoer and Bama? At this point, it's very much like Ryan Day losing to Michigan. It's in Kirby's head. He keeps making the same mental lapses in judgment in game management that just he doesn't make anywhere else. The team is always super tight and they're mistake prone and they're conservative. They don't want to make mistakes and cost them the game that they just don't ever make the right call. And then when they do try to be aggressive, they make the aggression is at the wrong time. It's astounding how it keeps working out this way for Georgia. Like, Georgia should have beaten Bama last year. They should have beaten Bama this year. This Bama team is not championship caliber. That defense should be able to handle Alabama. And yet they lost. Again. And personally, I'm not a fan of Kirby Smart and his everyone keeps talking crap about Georgia and it's all everyone's no one believed in us. Dude, you were 2-0. You were undefeated 2 years in a row, and yet you say that no one was at the time you were saying that no one believed in you. Yeah, right. You put like 57 billion players in the league those 2 years, but you're right, Kirby. Nobody believed in you. So I'm not a fan of Kirby Smart. I'll admit. I think the fans are kind of arrogant. I don't like Kirby Smart at all. Especially considering that Georgia, from like 1980 to 2020, they just didn't do anything of note. Either way, still, even I understand that Georgia should be better than this. The standard has been set higher than continually losing to Alabama in the most brain-dead, mind-numbing, mind-blowing ways possible. So, I don't get it. And Gunnar Stockton, the Georgia QB, I'm done hearing that he's elite. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear anymore, but oh, who could be the next elite SEC QB? It ain't sure as hell ain't going to be Gunnar Stockton. He went 13 of 20 for 130 yards and a touchdown. Does that sound like elite QB play to you? Not to me. Bryce Young used to be like 30 bazillion jillion passing yards a game. Even when he played poorly, he still made plays. Gunnar Stockton, it's just milquetoast. Dink and dunk and dink and dunk and dink and dunk. Short ball. Conservative throw. Don't ever make the tough decision. It's just they hype him up so much and he's always disappointing. And I'm going to get to another disappointing QB in a little bit. You probably know who that is. But Gunnar Stockton, you ran Carson Beck out of Athens. Carson Beck is ballin'. He is ballin' in Minnesota. He is playing out of his goddamn mind. But yet he wasn't good enough for Georgia. Nope. According to the fans, he wasn't good enough. They could do better. Gunnar Stockton was the answer. Uh-huh. How's that working out for you? Oh, yeah, he's doing well, and Gunnar Stockton looks like a fried turd. But you know what, Georgia fans? You're right. Yeah, Carson Beck was the problem. Yeah, so was your other QB. Oh, God, what was Stetson Bennett? Yeah, he was a real problem, too, even though he led you to two undefeated seasons in a row. But you know what? You're right, guys. He wasn't good enough. You needed someone better than him. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, I dropped something. Pisses me off. It just so entitled, and yet they always mistreat their. And the thing is, Gunnar Stockton, I can guarantee what's going to happen. They're going to blame Gunnar Stockton for falling short in the postseason again. They're going to run his ass out of town, and he's going to go to freaking Miami or Syracuse or one of these teams that throws the ball around, and he's going to play out of his goddamn mind and go to pro, and Georgia's going to be right back where they are now with another mid-QB who's really talented, who they mistreat. It's going to happen. Time is a flat circle. It's going to happen again because that's just what Georgia does. And it blows my mind. They're supposed to be better than this. Than 13 of 20 for 130 yards in a touchdown. That there should be better than this than 24 to 21 losses where no one scores in the fourth quarter. So disappointing. And on the Alabama side, Kalen DeBoer got a much-needed win. It feels like, to a lot of people, that Alabama has righted the ship after that humiliating loss to Florida State. And you know what? Clap it up for Kalen DeBoer. They righted the ship. This could have easily gotten out of hand. You know, you get blown out by Florida State, and you kind of stumble and trip up over the next couple teams, then you get beaten by Georgia in Georgia, and it's like all of a sudden your head is spinning, and it's like, oh my God, are we going to actually be able to right the ship? Well, Bama stayed calm, and they've got things right back on track where they need to be if they want to contend in the SEC. Now, if they fall short and win 9 games again, then I think Kalen DeBoer is going to be on the hot seat going into 2026, which isn't fair. But, you know, the guy who follows up the all-time great almost never succeeds. Look at David Shaw after Jim Harbaugh. It remains to be seen if Sharon Moore can pull that off. I don't know. If Michigan does better than 7 wins or 8 wins this year, then yeah, maybe. But sometimes when you get to these all-time great head coaches, there it is. When you get to these all-time greats, sometimes the guy tasked with following it up just isn't up to it. And you have to try not to, like, keep it going, and you have to, like, forge a new identity, you know? So we'll see. All right, moving on. Penn State versus Oregon. You know, I saw I was on Reddit, r/CFB, and someone in the post-game thread for Penn State versus Oregon came up with the greatest nickname for James Franklin. He's the steering wheel, because he has got his hands firmly grasped on 10-2. That's where Penn State lives, 10-2. He is the steering wheel. And man, oh man, is that fitting. Oregon defeated Penn State on a game-winning interception in double overtime by a score of 30-24. Oregon got up early, but Penn State was able to come back largely through defense and running the ball. And running the ball is what allowed them to really keep the game close. And then in double overtime, on first down, when all they needed was a touchdown and a two-point conversion to win, Drew Aller dropped back on the first snap and threw a terrible interception right to the defender on the right sideline. Game over. Once again, Drew Aller and James Franklin and Penn State fell short against elite competition. Ugh, it's so frustrating because the team recruits out of their damn skull, and yet 10-2. Disappointment. James Franklin is now 4 wins, 21 losses against top 10 teams in his career as a head coach. And you know what? Granted, winning against top 10 teams is exceedingly difficult. But I'm sorry. At Penn State, his teams have been one of the elite. And every time he goes up against a peer foe, he loses. You know, it's easy. Desert Storm, it's easy for American military units to beat the crap out of poorly trained, poorly equipped Iraqi army troops and tanks. They're not a peer foe to the United States. But the United States versus China would be a totally different ballgame because they're peers. They're on the same level. Every time Penn State plays against a peer foe, they lose. And they always lose in the same way. Poor QB play, bad penalties, stupid game management, get run on, fail to make the game your own. Penn State is one of these teams that they're a team that is just known as, well, yeah, they're a good team. Okay, but what do they do well? Well, I don't really know, but they're a good team. You know, what does Ohio State do? Ohio State throws the ball everywhere and has really good wide receivers. What does Michigan do? They run the ball and they play defense. What did Nick Saban's teams? They don't make mistakes, ever. They just don't make mistakes. If you want to beat them, you got to be perfect. What did Chip Kelly's Oregon teams do? Oh, they were really fast. They like to score a lot of points, especially running the ball, but they were really fast. What is Penn State? Well, they're good. They're a talented team. Okay, but what do they do well? Well, they're good. They're a talented team. Penn State doesn't, and it comes down to identity. The older I get, the more I realize the key to championship success is identity. Identity, identity, identity. Who are you? Who are you? If your team plays with an identity, they know who they are, they're going to win. Ohio State got away from their identity against Michigan. And then in the playoffs, they said, you know what we do? We throw the goddamn ball and we score touchdowns. And it's a bomb show and we're really aggressive. And guess what? They did it all through the postseason and won a national championship because they remembered who they were. They went back to their identity. That's the key. Championship teams have an identity. And Penn State doesn't. They're just a good team. They're a talented team. But what do they do? Nothing that I can know. They have a good defense. Okay, what does their defense do well? Well, they're just a good defense. Well, what about their offense? Well, they're just a good offense. But how are they good? Well, they got a good QB. What is he good at? Well, he's a talented QB. I mean, they don't do anything really well. They don't specialize in anything. It's, you know, good in everything, master of nothing. That's Penn State. They're just the team that is kind of sort of good at everything, but isn't great at anything. And they always fall short. Again, like, Michigan played Penn State in 2023. And it became very clear that Michigan could not block Abdul Carter. He was blowing up every pass play. So what did Michigan do? They stopped throwing. Michigan ran 32 straight run plays. Over and over and over and over and over. And it looked ugly as sin. But you know what happened? They broke off just enough big runs to beat Penn State. At the end of the day, stop selling out to defend the pass, Penn State. Sell out to defend the run. Rise to the occasion. Michigan was willing to ditch their game plan and improvise a new one on the fly because they needed to beat Penn State. That's the difference. Michigan was, yeah, we wanted to do a lot more play action, especially out of the shotgun, mix in some RPOs, and yeah, we're going to run. We wanted to be a little more wide open because they got these good defensive linemen. Oh, that's not working. Then what are we going to do? We're going to run right at them. Over and over. Donovan Edwards running right at the gap that Abdul Carter's pass rush vacates. Over and over and over. That's what championship teams do. So when it was double overtime and you needed to move the ball, Penn State, what should you do? Run the ball. Penn State was running the ball effectively for good yardage. They were getting good production out of their run game. Run the ball until Oregon forces you to stop running. It's the one thing you were good at. You were good at defense and running the ball. run the ball. But instead, you gave the ball to your mid quarterback. And I'll say it, Drew Aller is not an elite QB. Oh, he's great against minnows. He's freaking diabolical against East Saginaw Union State A&M, Indiana. Like, he's good against, you know, the sisters of, you know, little sisters of the poor. Or the Dayton, Ohio YMCA. He's great against those teams, 71%, 250 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks, all day long. And then you play Michigan. 13 of 27 for 122 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 picks, 3 sacks. 51% completion percentage. Every time he plays an elite team, his completion percentage and efficiency drops by like 20%. He's just not it. And it's the same issues. Not reading the defense. Losing defenders in coverage. Making really blatant, poorly timed throws to receivers that just aren't open. It's the same mistakes he's been making since he was a freshman. He's a senior. 4-year starter. At this point, Drew, you have to be better than this. You should be able to do what you do against Saginaw Union Valley A&M State against Oregon. A 4-year starter should be absolutely surgical against everybody at this level. If you are truly that guy, you're built like freaking Andrew Luck. You're like 6 foot a billion and 240 pounds. You can run, you can throw, you're built like a brick house. You should be elite. You have all the arm strength in the freaking world. You're fast as hell. You have everything you could need. And yet, every time the chips are down, he makes mistakes and he plays poorly. That's coaching. That's mental. At that point, that's mental. That's not physical ability. He's not freaking... Oh, God, what was his name? He's the head coach of the Saints right now. Him. You know, he played for the Lions. He played for Boise State. He had a noodle for arm. Maximum distance was like 20 yards if he was really huffing and puffing. But he was elite between the ears, which is why he was one of the winningest quarterbacks in the history of college football. Drew Aller has the tools, but he doesn't have the mental side. And that comes down to coaching, which circles back to James motherfucking Franklin. It's one of those where I don't think you fire him if you're Penn State, because quite frankly, he's a good coach. He'll get you 10 wins. He'll get you in the playoffs. You'll never win. You'll never win the Big Ten. You'll never win in the playoffs, but he'll get you there every single year. So, and that if that's what you want, then you need to keep him. But and I think you should keep him. But man, it's hard to justify keeping him around when they always fall short in crunch time. And now maybe you say maybe Kurt Cignetti can do it. But what if Kurt Cignetti can't do it? And then you fire James Franklin and he goes somewhere else, does well. And then Penn State's in the wilderness for the next 10 years. I've been there. I've seen that. Michigan was lost in the wilderness from 2007 until 2021. It wasn't until the 21 season when Michigan finally got back to being a good program. It can take a long ass time. It took 14 years for Michigan. Penn State, like that. Snap your fingers and it's over. So be careful. Keep James Franklin around. But just know you'll never get over the mountain. You'll never get over the hill. It'll never happen. This is what Penn State's going to be with him. 10-2 in the playoffs, unspectacular, never going to make the magical run. They're never going to be Ohio State last year or Michigan in 23 or Bama all those years under Saban. They're never going to be that. And they recruit too well to be that bad. But that's what they are. Because they got the steering wheel at head coach. 10-2. Eyes forward. Disappointing. All right, moving on. Next week, Michigan is taking on Wisconsin in the homecoming game. Big Noon is going to be there. It's following a big win over Nebraska. Sherrone Moore is rejoining Michigan. His 2-week suspension is over. And Michigan is going to look to get to 2-0 in conference play. And man, this game is interesting because Everyone always regards Wisconsin as, oh, they're a physical team and they're hard to beat and all this. Well, Wisconsin doesn't really do anything well this year. They don't throw the ball well. They certainly don't run the ball well. Their O-line is not great. Their receivers aren't good. Their QB is miserable. On defense, they're just eh. Like, they lost 27-10 to Maryland last week. 27-10. They like give up like 38 points to Bama. And yeah, Bama's good, but still. Wisconsin, and Luke Fickell was thought to be the answer. He was an A++++ hire for Wisconsin because Wisconsin has the money to do NIL. They can recruit. They got a big stadium. They have good facilities. They got everything you need. And yet, it just ain't working in Wisconsin. It ain't working at Wisconsin. And now they're coming to play a Michigan team that's kind of feeling themselves a little bit. Like, Bryce Underwood is not spectacular, but he's a weapon. And Justice Haynes is just running with his hair on fire. Michigan's O-line is finally gelling. They're playing better. They're running the ball effectively. The wide receivers are still eh. But Donovan McCauley looks like to be the real deal, and Marlon Klein, when he's healthy, is pretty good. And Michigan's defense is starting to round into form, and they got Rod Moore back, and they're healthy, knock on wood. Just gonna knock on wood there. So for Wisconsin, this is a bad time. Now, yes, they're coming off of a bye week, as is Michigan, but man, this is a bad time to be playing Michigan, because I think this Michigan team is really starting to get somewhere after defeating Nebraska. And now I get it. Nebraska's got a horrible run defense, and they got bullied in the trenches, and they're not elite. But the things that Michigan showed improvement on against Nebraska were things that weren't having to do with Nebraska. It was discipline and coverage, not blowing as many assignments. It was gap integrity in run defense, not committing too many boneheaded defeat defensive penalties. They had one for a taunting, but against Central, they had like three of them. Against Oklahoma, they had like 1,000 of them. So it's one of those where Michigan is starting to get where they need to be. Starting. They're not there yet, but right now, they're a dangerous opponent for Wisconsin, and if I had to make a prediction, I think Michigan is going to defeat them 24-10. It's going to be low scoring, and it's probably going to be 17-3 entering the third quarter, and both teams, and it'll be like Michigan will get a touchdown, and then Wisconsin will get a garbage time touchdown or something like that. But it's going to be ugly, low scoring, 24-10 kind of game. Two weeks ago, on Reddit, I was predicting that Michigan was going to win, like, I think I said 34-31, and it was 30-27 or whatever.
Excuse me.
Sorry, yawn came out of nowhere. So I think 24-10 is kind of where my mind goes with the prediction. Low scoring, ugly, defensive, but Michigan is kind of in control the whole way. Justice Haynes breaks off another 75-yarder. You know, Bryce Underwood has like 140 yards and a touchdown. You know, 50 yards rushing. It's nothing spectacular, but it gets the job done so they can focus ahead on their next opponent. All right, moving on from Michigan versus Wisconsin. Also coming up, we got Clemson at North Carolina. UNC is 2-2, and Clemson is 1-3. Both teams need this game to kind of right the ship, because even though UNC is 2-2, they're kind of flailing. And for Clemson, they are in a freaking free fall. They need to take care of business against UNC. And man, if Clemson falls to 1-4, Dabo may be in serious trouble. Like, you might be getting into territory of does Dabo finish the season kind of stuff. Because at 1-4, players are going to be thinking, do I think about maybe getting in the portal or do I opt out if I've only played 3 games and I'm a freshman? You know, I got to look after myself, so I'm not going to play as hard because I don't want to get hurt. If Clemson goes to 1-4, things can really spiral out of control. And at that point, maybe you get a 3-9 kind of campaign. Now, if Clemson gets to 2-3, then okay, maybe you could start clawing it back and get like 7 or 8 wins. That's gone. Playoffs are gone. Conference championship is gone. But maybe you can get back to a mid-tier bowl game and kind of right the ship. Now, either way, I think Dabo is gone after this year. I really do. Because I don't think it's Mike Gundy bad. But. If they lose against UNC, and this UNC team is not good. They do not throw the ball well. They're not physical at all. Their defense is certainly something. If they beat Clemson, I think Clemson is going to completely unravel, because at that point, the team isn't listening to Dabo, and his message isn't getting across, and the questions about his leadership and whether or not his time should be over are going to start getting really loud, and he's going to start getting really belligerent with the press. So it's one of those things where Clemson, if I had to pick between the two teams, Clemson has to win this game. Has to. Dabo's career depends on them beating UNC. Sorry, took another drink of water. All right, another game. Vandy is going to Alabama. Yes, the Vanderbilt Commodores and quarterback Diego Pavia. Sorry, Pavia. Pavia. It's not Pavia. Pavia. And they're looking to keep the winning going. They're 4-0 right now. Vandy is ranked 4-0. And they're looking to beat Bama for the first time in consecutive years in God. Have they ever beat Bama in consecutive years? Has that ever happened in Vanderbilt history? So they're looking to have another top 10 upset kind of thing. This time it would be a top 15 because Bama's like 12, I think, or 11. But either way, Vanderbilt, man, they're a fun team this year. And they're sneaky. They're a scrappy little team. I like them a lot. Bama is looking to avenge the loss that really kind of derailed their season last year. And the key to Vanderbilt versus Alabama is Diego Pavia. If Diego Pavia is allowed to run the ball effectively and is efficient passing the ball, he'll dominate and they'll win. Because right now, Pavia leads Vandy in both passing and rushing yards. So, excuse me. So, if Bama can't keep him contained and allows him to go off, Vandy's going to win easily. I truly believe they'll win easily. Just like they manhandled Vandy last year. So, go Commodores. Grimace. So, the last thing I want to talk about, Miami is going to Florida State. This is a crucial game for both teams. Miami is looking to firmly establish dominance over the ACC in 2025. Florida State is looking to bounce back after a humiliating, shocking double overtime loss to the Virginia Cavaliers. Holy crap, you lost to Virginia in double overtime? What the hell? What the hell, Florida State? You beat freaking Bama. I don't know what happened to Florida State against Virginia. It was just one of those games. I watched the end of it, and I'm like, what am I seeing? You know? So, man, Miami is looking to get to 5-0 with a win, which didn't have that on my bingo card. I thought they'd do well this year, but I didn't think they'd do potentially 5-0, not even a, you know, ain't no thing kind of thing. So, it's impressive. They're both looking to punch their ticket to the ACC championship game down the line, and this game is going to go a long way in setting that up. Now, if I had to make a prediction, Florida State's going to win. I like Thomas Castellanos, and I trust Mike Norvell more than Mario Cristobal. Sorry, not sorry. So that's kind of all. That's all I wanted to talk about today. So for those of you listening on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and everywhere else that podcasts are available, thank you, thank you, thank you, and thank you. Spread the word. Tell your friends and family so we can keep this thing going. Consider subscribing or however you do that on podcasts. For those of you listening on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, hit the bell icon, feed the algorithm so we can keep this thing going. We had slightly better viewership, 6 whole viewers on the last one. So, you know what? Let's keep this thing rolling, keep growing the channel. I love doing this. It's a ton of fun. So spread the word and let's make this thing something special. All right. Next week, we're going to keep on going with the week 6 of the college football roundup. My name is H. James K. Thank you all for tuning in. Until next time.